This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Fairfax newspapers, and more particularly The Age, have been in the news of late with the proposal to sack many of the paper's sub-editors and outsource the service. Not everyone understands how much the sub-editors every day reflect the flavour and tone of the paper. They write the headlines, check the reporter's copy, and lay out the pages. To tell us how outsourcing could affect the independence of The Age, we have in the studio sub-editor Alison Kasser and reporter Ben Schneiders.
Well, this is going to be an interesting discussion, and we've had a lot of feedback from members. We sent an email out to members yesterday, Leanne, on this, and I know that there's a campaign that's been running for a couple of weeks. If you have a question, you want to make a comment, of course, 0427JOY949 or email us onair@joy.org.au. Welcome, Alison and Ben. How are you feeling, guys?
Oh, okay. It's been a rough 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, it's been a difficult period, but we're hoping this campaign will see the company reverse its decision.
Let's talk about first. Tell us why the role of a sub-editor is so important to the flavour and the independence of a paper.
Well, I am a sub-editor, so I can speak to that. The sub-editors who work at The Age, for the most part, I mean, I've been there for 12 years, and most of the subs on the desk have been there for 5 or 6 years or more. They know the style of the paper. They understand the ethos of the paper. They guard that ethos and that style. And having sub-editors in the building is an important conduit between the writers, editors, and what comes out at the other end in terms of what's printed and what you see in the morning. And I think we also create stuff, and I think that's forgotten sometimes, that people just think we're production. And one of the things management has said is that this is part of freeing up money to concentrate on the creation rather than the production. And it's been pointed out that sub-editors create the headlines that draw people in. They create the captions. They pick out interesting quotes to highlight. They also are graphic artists and designers who must also not be forgotten here, because they are also losing people. They create amazing illustrations and graphics. And I think that's forgotten sometimes. They just think we're just these little rabbity people that sit at a desk and spit out whatever the reporters produce.
And I think, Alison, in this day of not just having print media but having online as well, surely things like short, sharp grabs and headlines and graphics are even more essential. Am I just being naive?
No, I am on online, actually. I was a print sub-editor for a very long time, and I've been on online now for just almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years in September on the National Times, which is our opinion website. I'm the chief sub-editor. And yes, it is very, because you haven't got as much space to work with online. And also you have to have interesting pictures. That's part of my role, to pick good pictures to draw people in. So yeah, it is, sub-editing is not just for print. It is essential to online, and good sub-editors are essential to online, because you're working at a much faster pace than on print, because you might get a story in 20 minutes. You've got to get it up there ready to go, not an hour, for example. I mean, not that the sub-editors on print have an hour anymore, but yeah, it's essential.
Now, one question that I'm interested in, and I'll flag here, I used to be a journo, although albeit a fairly average one, and having worked with subs. But as a reporter, Ben, obviously one of the interesting things, or one of the important things about journalism, is the accuracy and the flavour, and getting the facts right, not libelling someone, etc. Is the responsibility, obviously, initially is with the journalist. Is the problem with when, and they have to get it right, but a sub, if you have a sub that's not familiar with the subject, or isn't familiar with the report, or isn't familiar with the issue, that stuff gets printed or published that could actually leave the paper open to legal action? And I mean, have Fairfax considered this, or have the management considered this? Have they, of all these millions of dollars they're going to save, are they putting half of that aside for legal actions?
Well, I don't think they really have considered this, because that's a very good point, because the sub-editor not only sort of writes the headlines, they also do a very good job at checking and having a corporate memory that goes back decades about the city or the state or the issue. So when they see something, they can they'll pick up that there might be something the matter with it. I'll give you an example. A few weeks ago, I was writing a story that was saying the desalination plant in Wonthaggi was 6 to 12 months behind. The builder was losing hundreds of millions of dollars. We got the story very late in the day. It was an exclusive. It was on page one. The company came back with a response to me at about 9 p.m., so after our first edition had gone. So I typed out on my iPhone a response from the company. But the woman who represents the company, her name's Serena Middleton. In my rush, I called her Serena Williams, who, of course, is the well-known tennis player. I sent off my...
Well, she did lob one back over the net.
She did. She did. So I sent off my my comments through to the news desk and, you know, rang them and said, put this in the story, the comment from the company, you know, responding to our story. About half an hour later, a sub-editor rings me up and says, did you really mean Serena Williams? And I said, what? You know, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? And of course, it was picked up. It would have been embarrassing the next day for the main front page story to have someone misdescribed as Serena Williams. Maybe no one, maybe not many people would have noticed it, but people would have noticed it. And when you're working under tight pressure as a reporter, where, you know, a story might come in at 5:30 or it's a story that has legal ramifications, having people with decades of experience who have the corporate memory, who love the masthead they work for, who are directly employed by it, is absolutely vital. And this model that the company is proposing will see that outsourced to people who will be paid a lot less, who won't have the same relationship to the masthead. And I think, yes, there are very real risks that there'll be more lawsuits against the company as a result.
So these outsourced people, Ben, where are they actually located?
Well, they're going to be the company that's going to be employing them is a company called PageMasters, which is part owned actually by our company Fairfax, and also part owned by our major competitor News Limited. I believe they're setting up an office in Melbourne. Most of their work previously has been based out of Brisbane, but we don't know yet what sort of pay rates they're going to get. But all indications are that they're going to be paid a lot less than the subs that are currently employed directly by The Age. And you're probably going to get a lot more junior people and a lot of people who don't have the same relationship with the paper.
So if I understand this correctly, you could actually have people editing newspaper articles for a number of different newspapers and therefore having the same flavour or whatever across the board. So we're going to get potentially just a bland one off, a bit like the States where it's, you know, the same news virtually coming out of all supposed sources.
Well, yeah. Well, interestingly, News Limited themselves haven't outsourced their sub-editing work. They've changed the way they sub-edit, but they've kept it in-house. And I think there's been some pain there for the sub-editors. But Fairfax has really gone out a radical model whereby they're going to outsource to a company that, yeah, is part-owned by the major competitor and the company that dominates the print media in Australia. So it's a real blow, I think, to media diversity as well.
I mean, it's interesting because I know in some classified areas that News Limited and Fairfax actually share a sales force, which I find fascinating. But I mean, the big threat here is that the independence of the reporters and The Age, because none of us know, probably is a pun intended, we don't want our News Limited, but how is this going to affect the independence of The Age? And, you know, and for us and for our community, it's hugely important that The Age has for decades has run stories and researched on issues that affect our community. So how is this outsourcing going to affect that?
Well, I think yes, it is. We're fearful that it will compromise that independence. The management is saying they're going to have a Melbourne hub, and all those journalists will just sub Age stories, and they're trying to push our sub editors to go and work for PageMasters on a collective agreement which offers them far lesser terms and conditions, but they're not really giving them much choice. And our argument is, what sort of loyalty are you going to have? And also, if these people don't like it, or if our people don't want to go there, you are going to have people subbing it who don't understand The Age, who don't understand what we believe in. And I do honestly fear that this is a move that could damage the quality of The Age and ultimately damage the brand. Now, the company obviously wants, and The Age is still a fantastic newspaper. Please don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to run down the masthead. But we have covered issues in the lesbian, gay, transsexual, intersex community very well. In fact, I've got about 20 examples here just in the last year, including one story that was run last week by Michelle Griffin on a fantastic group founded by a young person who was having gender identity issues, who had been brought up as a girl, was now living as a boy. And it was just beautifully written and sensitively handled. And one of the things that worries me is that kind of stuff won't, those kind of stories won't get done properly, and they perhaps won't be handled as sensitively by people who don't understand the issues and who don't have a kind of understanding of what we're trying to do as a newspaper.
Because often you don't miss something until it's gone, and I mean how important that is. We're speaking with Alison Kassar and Ben Schneiders from The Age. If you have a comment, 0427 Joy 949, on air at joy.org.au. This is Macca and Leanne on Saturday Magazine. And you are, of course, on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Hope you are enjoying listening now. Don't forget, if you're not a member, you bloody well should be, because you're listening and it costs money. We're on air, we don't run on air. Leanne.
Very well said. Now, Alison, you talked about that you, in your position as sub-editor, have been asked to go and work for the new organisation. Does that affect all sub-editors across the paper, and how do they propose that working?
Basically, what's happened is they've had what's known industrially as a spill and fill. We have a section in the agreement under the redundancies where they must open voluntary redundancies to the entire business unit, which is the whole Age and the whole Sydney Morning Herald. We argue that the company has bypassed that section of the agreement and gone straight to the targeted sections in the business unit, which would be the sub-editors, graphic artists and designers. What they have asked us to do is they have formed four new titles: a page editor, a story editor, a visual journalist, which is the graphic artists and designers, and a reader's editor. The sub-editors, graphic artists and designers have to reapply for either their jobs or those jobs, and from there they will pick, I think it's 20 page editors, four story editors and one reader's editor, and there will be 11 visual journalists, cut back from 16.
My goodness, now you haven't mentioned news in there. How's news affected?
Well, news comes under the page editor model.
Okay, so
the news editors will continue to operate as news editors, and under them will be the page editors who will be, it's a two-page position description, who will be responsible for pretty much everything, commissioning, headlines, checking back the quality coming back from page masters.
Can I jump in? I mean, I'm just a mere panel operator here, but I'm a member of the MEAA and I'm very proud of the campaign you're doing. It's Greg speaking. What's the effect on the duration of service that you have if you've got to spill and fill and reapply for your job? Are you going to be back to zero in terms of length of service with the company?
No, we asked them that. If I keep my job, which I reapplied for and interviewed for yesterday, I will still keep my 12 years of service and all the accruements I've had there. But those that are unsuccessful in applying for these page editor positions will have to either go to page masters. They will be offered redundancy, and that will be calculated based on the enterprise bargaining agreement. Or basically, if they don't want to go to page masters, they will be get their redundancy and off they go. The problem we're having is there's a lot of conflicting information coming to the sub-editors from senior managers in the company. We're hearing things that you can't work for page editors until you've been off on redundancy for 3 months, and yet the company's asking page masters to give preference to our sub-editors, and we're getting conflicting messages about what you're entitled to under redundancy, and we're finding it very difficult to get clear answers on this.
We've got really good media laws that stop media ownership being aggregated so tightly that we don't get diversity in the press. It seems strange that they're allowed to then take staff and have them working for an aggregation of one company, basically, that diminishes the cross media ownership laws in a way that's, I don't think, is intended by the legislation.
I'm sure Ben's got a comment on that.
No, I think it's a very good point, and it's something that that we've launched a public campaign since the decision was made by Fairfax, and that point has been picked up by a lot of people, a lot of prominent people who have supported it. We've got the support of former Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser, Joan Kerner, Bob Carr, John Cain, Gus Nossal. There's a range of people, the Australian of the Year, Patrick McGorry. And in a number of their comments, which are on our website, fairgofairfax.org.au, they make those points about issues of diversity and issues of, you know, being under the number of voices in the public space being undermined by this decision. And I don't think the company's really had to justify this yet, and we're hoping, you know, as our campaign goes on, it'll be forced to defend itself more in the public realm.
So Ben, just a question that popped into my head was, as a journalist and reporter, have you had any instruction on how you, not necessarily you, but how the paper will report on this situation?
Well, I've had to exempt myself from reporting on it because I'm obviously involved in, you know, in trying to, you know, mitigate it or stop it. The interesting thing is that the paper really hasn't reported it yet, and that's been disappointing. We'd hope that there would be some coverage of our rally earlier this week and of the support we got from some of the people I mentioned earlier. There was a report online on the day, but yeah, the paper hasn't really reported on what's going on, which is quite a change to the way that we operate. So we're hoping that will change very, very soon.
I mean, it's interesting, the effective day-to-day boss of Fairfax, Greg Highwood, he's an ex-journalist, ex-editor. Do you think the company realises that, you know, there's, let's call it chatter out there amongst a lot of advertisers, that one of the reasons they advertise in The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald and the Fin Review, and the Fin Review is a different situation, isn't it, but is, you know, it's the type of reader it attracts. You know, it's the quality of the journalism, and that people are, you know, prepared to pay to advertise in that medium. Do you think they understand what they're actually playing with here?
They do now, yeah. Because I've been involved in the EBA negotiations as a House Committee union delegate. And yes, they say the public campaign is starting to have an effect. They've been deluged with emails to the point where they've had to shut their email down. I don't know if advertisers have contacted them. We haven't certainly not gone to any advertisers because obviously we can't under trade practices law, I think. But certainly our view always was, the sub-editors, when this first happened, in fact the whole floor wanted to walk out that very day. And we basically said, no, this is not the way to go, that we have to campaign on the quality of our masthead. Mm. And I think it's really starting to bite now. If you look on our website, the one that Ben mentioned, there is an amazing amount of support from people. John Cain spoke at our rally, for example, as did Father Bob. I love Father Bob. Anyway, so, yeah, it's biting. It is biting. And I think it'll only be a matter of time before we'll hear on the grapevine that advertisers are starting to go to them saying, oi, you know, what's going on here? You know, do something about it.
Yeah.
And just quickly, the other interesting thing about this as well is it doesn't save the company a whole lot of money. We're talking about, at The Age, you know, low single millions of dollars that this plan will save. And The Age is a very big enterprise that turns over tens of millions of dollars. So it's not a sort of decision that's going to change the financial fortunes of the company in a major way, but we say it's going to have a very bad effect on the culture of the organisation and, in the end, the news that is produced. So we just don't see the trade-off there for the company.
I mean, perhaps there should be some award to the some of the Fairfax board for money management. I mean, they paid, I think, 500-odd million for a couple of the radio stations, and they're looking to sell them for 250 million.
Yes, I think this is a culmination, which, you know,
it's a shit sandwich, basically.
It is a shit sandwich, and we did say to management, thanks very much. But basically, this has been the culmination of years of mismanagement by Fairfax senior managers. And yet through all that, through the share price dropping, through a company that at one point was almost, I think the words were, balance sheet insolvent at one point, the executives and the chief executives all received their bonuses in 2010 to the tune of $4.1 million.
We've got I know it's not good. I've got here, we've got from... a listener, been listening to this interesting discussion about The Age. He left The Age about 10 years ago. He'd worked in the editorial library for over 20 years. I work closely with the journalists and subs and understand the synergy that exists between them. Ben's earlier comments about subs being fundamental in picking up mistakes that might occur in a copy is correct. I know firsthand that the library staff are always being asked to check mistaken facts and names that the sub-editors picked up. These mistakes would have gone to press and made The Age look very foolish. I certainly hope The Age doesn't go down this road. And that's from Eric. And I mean, I suppose that's the real risk, isn't it? That the accuracy, that's the biggest threat here. And accuracy is so important to independence.
It is. And, you know, reporters obviously try to get everything right, but the reality is it's just the time pressures. When you're filing something in 20 minutes, you've got to write 500-600 words, you might have another story to do. Sometimes you might misspell a name, sometimes you might clumsily phrase a sentence which gives it a different meaning to what you intend. So the professionalism and the experience of sub-editors that work for the masthead and know it backwards and know the city is invaluable.
I just had one last question for the two of you. Is we've obviously got some listeners that feel strongly about what's going on. If people want to give support in any way, how do they go about that?
We have a Facebook page, which you can find on fairgofairfax.org.au. On that website, you will find messages of support. You will find our Twitter account, Save the Age, and also Save the SMH, and our Facebook page, Future Proof Fairfax. We would like you to sign up to our Twitter account, sign up to like our Facebook page, and basically that's where the support is coming and where the campaign will succeed, hopefully.
Okay, well, look, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, Alison Cassar and Ben Schneiders. I want to thank The Age because for more than my life, they've courageously and independently reported on the issues, and certainly for our community, we owe you guys a great deal. Thanks for giving your time. Keep us in the loop, and good luck.
Thank you.
This is Macca and Leanne on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. And you are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. We were speaking with Alison Cassar and Ben Schneiders from The Age. Just so you know, I did ask Greg Highwood, the CEO of Fairfax, if he wanted some time to put the Fairfax point of view. Didn't get a reply. Perhaps he was subbing his email. And also asked the editor, his name escapes me, of the Melbourne Age, if he wanted to come on, offered him equal time. Also, no reply.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.